Welcome to the Studying the Bible podcast, where every Thursday, Pastors Dylan Dodson and Brian Androsian study a book of the Bible, verse by verse, to see what is being communicated and how we can use it to grow in our relationship with Jesus. We pray that today's podcast can help you grow just a little bit closer to Christ.
Well, welcome back to our Bible study through the book of Habakkuk. Today we're going to be in Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 12 through 17. So as a recap of where we are so far in the first chapter of Habakkuk, we saw in the first four verses, we saw Habakkuk issuing a complaint or a plea or a prayer to God to intervene with Judah because of their wickedness. And then we see in verses 5 through 11, we see God's response to Habakkuk. God told him that he would raise up Babylon, against them. And not only that, but he went on to describe how fierce and ruthless and horrifying the army of Babylon was. He stressed that they worship nobody except for their own strength, and that this was a godless nation being raised up by God to come against his own people. Needless to say, this would have been shocking information for Habakkuk, and we see his response starting in verse 12. So at verses 1 through 4 was Habakkuk's first complaint to God, then God's response, and now we're seeing his second complaint to God based on God's response starting in verse 12. So Habakkuk chapter 1, starting in verse 12, is where we'll be kicking off today, and it says this. Are you not from eternity, Lord my God? My Holy One, you will not die. Lord, you appointed them to execute judgment. My rock, you destined them to punish us. So Habakkuk starts off by acknowledging truths about God that he knows to be true. You are eternal. You are immortal. But despite your immortality and wisdom, you're sending an executioner to your people? Just basically what he's saying. And not only that, but the executioner that he has chosen is evil and wicked. It's not a more righteous nation that's coming to conquer them because they're being less righteous. It's an evil and a wicked nation that's going to be coming to conquer them. How could a holy and righteous God use such a wicked and godless nation to exact his will? It continues in verse 13. It says, your eyes are too pure to look on evil, and you cannot tolerate wrongdoing. So why do you tolerate those who are treacherous? Why are you silent while one who is wicked swallows up one who is more righteous than himself? And so this verse sounds oddly similar to Habakkuk's first prayer in verses 1 through 4. However, this time, he isn't focusing inward on his own people, but he's focusing outward toward Babylon. And again, he appeals to the character of God and his inability to look upon evil, and he doesn't understand why God is doing what he's doing. And what's interesting here is that Habakkuk now uses the word righteous to describe the people of Judah. He doesn't flat out call them righteous, but he says that they're more righteous than Babylon, which based on his original complaint to God at the beginning of this book and how he calls them righteous in comparison to Babylon, we see how he views the Babylonians. You know, his initial complaint to God was talking about how wicked his own people were, how wicked the people of Judah were. And now that the Babylonians are brought into play, now he's talking about how much more righteous they are than the Babylonians. So this, we can see how he views the Babylonians in comparison to the people of Judah. And he's not understanding. How could God use such an evil nation to accomplish his will? He continues in verses 14 and 15. He says, you have made mankind like the fish of the sea, like marine creatures that have no ruler. The Chaldeans pull them all up with a hook, catch them in their dragnet, and gather them in their fishing net, and that is why they are glad and rejoice. So in these next few verses, Habakkuk is describing the sheer power that the Babylonians have over everybody else. By comparison, everybody else are just like fish in the sea, which the Babylonians pull up with their hook or with their dragnet, and by comparison, everyone else is powerless before the Babylonians. See, how can fish, even a large school of fish, how can fish stand up against one man with a hook or with a dragnet, with a net that he can pull them all in with? Habakkuk is stressing that there isn't even a fight here. In no universe are they on equal footing here strength-wise. The Babylonians will run rampant on them and capture them, and they have no way to stop them. Then he continues in verse 16. He says, that is why they sacrifice to their dragnet and burn incense to their fishing net. For by these things their portion is rich and their food is plentiful. So comparing the Babylonians to fishermen, it's an apt comparison because the Babylonians survived on conquering and plundering other nations. So their strength became their god, as was mentioned earlier. And similarly, a fisherman cannot survive without fish that he catches or captures in his dragnet, or the net that he fishes with. It's the most important thing in the world to him, because without it, he can't eat and he can't survive. So a fisherman lives and dies on his hook or on his net. And the Babylonian strength is their net. It's their hook. It allows them to capture and conquer other nations and allows them to amass resources and amass things that they can, that they use to survive. And because of that, their hook, their dragnet, in this case, a metaphor for their strength, has become their god. And in verse 17, as he closes this chapter, he says, "Will they therefore empty their net and continually slaughter nations without mercy?" Because of how successful the Babylonians have been in the past at catching fish, so to speak, or at conquering nations, will they not just continue to empty their nets and continue doing the same thing over and over and over again? If they're facing so little resistance and doing this so easily, are they not just going to continue doing this over and over and over again? And thus, aren't they just going to do the same thing to us? They've seen no opposition, so why wouldn't they do the same thing to Judah? Habakkuk ends his plea to God here sounding just as hopeless and defeated as he was when he began. He brought an issue to God, and here he is getting a response that's more awful than he imagined, and he's not understanding how this could be God's will at all. And this is where he ends his prayer to God. And after Habakkuk completes his second prayer, or his second plea to God, we see him wait. As we look just at the first verse of chapter 2, he says, "I will stand at my guard post and station myself on the lookout tower. I will watch to see what he will say to me and what I should reply about my complaint." So this verse 1 of chapter 2, this isn't part of his complaint to God. He finishes his complaint in chapter 1, and then he's saying that he will stand and wait for God's response about his complaint. Habakkuk shifts here from addressing God to addressing himself. And the imagery Habakkuk uses in this verse is of a military setting, or of him standing at a guard post or a lookout tower, waiting and watching for God's response. It's interestingly, we don't get a sense of frustration from Habakkuk about his waiting. We don't see him angry that he has to wait on God's response, or we don't see him frustrated about waiting on God. Rather, he says he will watch out for God, watch out for what God has to say to him, and how God will reply. And this verse in and of itself is a lesson in waiting on God, which, as we wrap up the second prayer from Habakkuk, it takes us to the first of our three takeaways today. And that's this: it's that faithfulness is willingness to wait on God. Faithfulness is being willing to wait on God. Unfortunately, God answers rarely in our timing. God doesn't answer things in our timing. And we can see from this first verse of chapter 2 that Habakkuk was willing to wait, willing to be patient, willing to patiently wait on God's response. In most of our cases, the things that we ask God for are probably less pertinent than what Habakkuk was crying out to God for. Maybe not, but maybe. The nation was going to be overrun by a violent oppressor, and he's crying out to God, not understanding why this is happening. But even though the situation was dire, even though the situation was so intense, he was willing to faithfully wait on God. And we have to understand that God's timing is perfect and ours isn't. See, being faithful is being willing to wait on God. Second thing we can see here is that God's silence does not equal inaction. What we perceive as silence from God does not mean that he's not acting. Just because we either can't see or can't understand how God is working, it doesn't mean that he's silent or that he isn't working in a situation that we're asking him to work in. God is always working, and just because we don't feel like we hear from him, it doesn't mean that he's not working. God's silence, or what we perceive at least as God's silence, does not equal inaction. And the third and final thing that we can see today is that we can all worship our own strengths. We all at times worship our own strengths. We can easily look at Habakkuk's comments about Babylon and think about how wicked they are. How wicked they are that they would worship themselves and all the things that they do. They worship their dragnet or their strength, so to speak, instead of worshiping God. However, We can so easily worship our own strengths if we're not careful. We can so easily do the same thing. We can see something that we're good at, whether it be, or we can see like a personality trait of ourselves or a career move that we make, and we worship that thing as if we are solely responsible for our strengths, or we are solely responsible for this good thing that happened in our lives. There's so much focus, and just as people now, we have so much focus on finding out what our strengths are, and there's so many tests that you can take to determine where your strengths lie. And none of these are necessarily bad in and of themselves, but we can so easily lean into our strengths so heavily that they become what we worship. That I have this strength, and so this is my identity is focused around this strength of mine, and every move I make is about this strength of mine, and it becomes just all-consuming, and we end up worshiping the things that we're good at, and we end up thinking, or we end up even subconsciously thinking, that we are responsible for everything that we do, or we are the reason that we're successful, or we're the reason that we have this strength. It becomes what we worship. We can focus so much on our own strength and what we're good at, and forget that those strengths come from God and not from ourselves. And that's where we're going to leave off today. Habakkuk is crying out to God for a second time. He got God's response, and it's a response that I'm sure he didn't expect whatsoever, and he's crying out to God about his response. He's crying out to God a second time, and he's not understanding why God is doing what he's doing. And now as we leave off after verse 1, he's patiently waiting on God's response. And God's response is where we're going to pick it up in our next section. But for now, that's where we're going to leave off, and that's what we see in Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 12, versus chapter 2, verse 1.